Do you have a favorite fishing story?
I do. It's actually the very first fish that I ever caught. I was 4 years old. I had a little Snoopy fishing pole, and I was out on the boat with my dad and my grandpa, and I got a fish on the hook, and I started reeling it in, and I was like, "Dad, it's so hard." And my dad is like, "You can do it. You can do it." Like,
he's encouraging me. Did he think that you got it caught on a weed?
He might have thought I had it caught on a weed at one point, but then he's like, "Oh, you have a fish. Like, you can do it." Like, he's like, "You're going to catch your first fish. Go ahead and do it." So I'm like really struggling, and I think my dad a little bit is like, is he like, is this actually like really hard or whatever? And as I was starting to get closer in, he realizes that this is not like me feigning like weakness. This is actually a humongous fish. And so the ending, my dad like helps me get the fish into the boat, and it is a 24-inch northern pike, which is barely a keeper for northern pikes. It's 24 inches is the keeper, at least in Michigan at that time. And so I know there's a lot bigger fishes than that, but I'm a 4 year old catching it on a little tiny. And so my dad pulls it up and I see the teeth, and I run to the other end of the rowboat and screamed, "Don't let it eat me." I was terrified of this fish.
I love it. We have a family picture that is just brings me a lot of joy, and it's dad holding you with terror on your face, joy on dad's face. He's so proud that his son caught his first fish, holding up this giant, you know, pike. And
Paul is in the picture. His hand is sticking into the picture. I don't know if you even know
that. I did not know this.
But Paul was not scared of the fish at all. Paul's 2 years younger than me. Paul's like 2, and dad's like holding the fish, this pike with big old teeth, and Paul's sticking his finger into the mouth of the fish, like, "Oh, this is so cool." Paul was completely unfazed, and I was absolutely terrified. But I don't think that I've ever caught a fish larger than my very first fish. So
you peaked early.
I did. That was like a great fish. So, what about you?
For me, what I mostly think of is we actually grew up on a fishing lake. We had this little private lake, you know, like 5 families had access to it.
It's more like a pond, but it's a lake.
It's a lake, but great for fishing. And so in the summer times, we'd often go out there and go fishing as a family. Or at least me, you, Dad, and David would go a decent amount. And we would have 3 different categories of like how to win at fishing.
Which competition.
Got to put some competition in it to make it more fun. So we had whoever could get the first fish would get a point. Whoever got the most fish would get a point. Whoever got the biggest fish would get a point. And so I just remember a lot of summer nights where we would be going out fishing, which is funny because that kind of spoiled, because I am not a big fisherman.
No.
But we fished a lot growing up because it was just there. And like even like the concept of like having to go buy a permit to go fishing is super foreign to me, because it's just like, wait, everyone doesn't have a private fishing lake that...
I just didn't even think about the fact that that was normal. It was just like, at our lake, there was no DNR coming out to flag you. And I think that we were fine because it was a lake that was private. So it's just weird.
I mean, we always catch and release for the most part. I mean, every once in a while we get bluegills for a fish fry, which I don't really like, but...
it's fun.
So, yeah.
So those are our fish stories. Today, though, here at IndieQ, welcome to IndieQ. We are jumping into the indie game Dredge.
Yes, so Dredge is a fishing game, but it's a horror fishing game. The premise of the game is you are this ship captain, and you pilot your ship around to these different locations, and you can do these quick time events, like these little mini games, to catch the fish. Once you catch your fish, there is like this Tetris-y puzzle of trying to fit it into your cargo hold. And then you are taking your fish back to the fish market and selling them to then make money in order to buy upgrades. And then there's also story aspects. And the horror comes in that this is a really weird, you know, island chain that you're at. And once it gets dark, you kind of start to go crazy. And you have this like insanity meter that rises. And as you go more insane, there are more weird mutated fish that you can catch that sell for more money and are just weird and kind of gross looking, but also monsters start appearing. There's some like times where like crows are like attacking you in your ship, stealing your, you know, your
fish,
your fish, like rocks will randomly just appear where there shouldn't be rocks. Like there's lots of different aspects of like, you're going crazy and things are changing as you're going out. There's like very like Lovecraftian feel to the world at night.
So a lot of that stuff is happening at night, but also as you're starting off, like it does a good, the game does a good job of like starting you in the right direction of like, here's what you need to do in order to like kind of start progressing. And then you get these little tips of like, oh, there's this place over here that you should go check out. And so Paul was mentioning that there are kind of different areas of that you can go and explore. And at the very beginning of the game, like maybe you, it seems like you experienced the nighttime way more than I did, because I was pretty quick to go back to port and sleep the night off and just go back out and avoid a lot of the those horror aspects. And when you say horror, it's not like it's like scary in terms of like you are personally frightened. It's just like things in the game are coming to get you.
It would be terrifying if you were actually experiencing it in real life.
Very much so. So I was never like, it's not a game that if you're like, I don't really like scary movies.
It's not jump scary. Yeah, it's just it's like creepy, weird things are happening.
Yes, very much not the jump scare. And so I was always very quick to go back to port when nighttime would come. There was the early on in the game, I went off and was like exploring an area and it started getting too dark. And I kind of lost my bearings. And I looked around and I saw an area that looked like my home base that I've been used to going back to. So I just went there. And when I got there, it was a completely different, like, city, town area that I was in. And it was the first time that I got to see, like, oh, like, there's a lot more. Because it was pretty early on in the game, and my boat was really slow, and I was just chugging along the ocean. And so I just got to explore this new area kind of early on in the game, which kind of set me up well for just really enjoying the whole gameplay loop of this game.
Yeah, the story loop of the game basically revolves around these certain artifacts that this collector is asking you to find for him. And once you do so, you unlock these special powers that you can do. My first playthrough of the game, I could not find like the artifacts. And I went and experienced a humongous, you know, portion of the game. There's a bunch of different regions that have like their own little stories and quest lines that typically, you know,
culminate
in you finding one of these relics. And so I would get like 90-95% of the way done with this quest line, not realizing at the end of the quest line it's getting me the thing that I need to continue the story. And then I'd get kind of bored of the area and I'd go and just say, open my map, I'm just gonna go to find this next area. And it was replaying the game that I was able to found some of the stuff early and like got some of the powers, like the power to like turbocharge, go really fast, but raise your insanity meter. It was just like, oh, this makes the game way more enjoyable to me, because can be a lot of downtime, especially early in the game when your ship's not very fast.
Yeah.
To like get to the next island chain. And it was just funny for me. I was like, oh, this game feels so different when you have a more pointed direction.
Oh yeah.
Of what you're aiming for and what you're trying to do. But I think it goes to show that there's multiple things that you could latch onto, because the game loop of the going and fishing and getting more money is good. There's also different things you need to collect to be able to get these upgrades for your ship. But then there's also, you need the money to buy said upgrades. And then you have the story progression. And so which one of those really caught you? I'm curious.
I feel like when you first jump into the game, I thought that even the fishing mini games, they're very, very simple. But I enjoyed that little aspect of it, and then getting the money and looking towards upgrading my ship. That was the thing that kind of really hooked me, and I'm just like, man, I just want to get all these upgrades to the ship. And so that was a lot of my like motivation in moving forward, was I want to get all the upgrades. And then one of the things that you mentioned is there's these different regions, and each of these different regions, I think they each introduce like a new type of fishing equipment, like areas. So it's like, oh, we have the shallow water fishing, we have like deep water, like ocean fishing, but then we also have like these special ones that was like volcanic. It's like there's a volcanic area.
Abyssal.
And like there's these different types, and you need a specific type of fishing rod in order to even fish for these fish. And so like you needed to upgrade your like equipment. So it's not just upgrading your ship and making the cargo hold larger or things like that, but also upgrading this like the technologies of, and it's not just the rod, but that was the one that I latched onto first. So I was like, I want to get all these upgrades and make my ship like be able to do all of these different things. Even before I'd even explored the other areas, that was already where my mind was going, because I could see where I could potentially progress to.
I also, surprising to myself, found the mini game of rotating the fish and your equipment around to maximize how much you can fit in your cargo hold before going back to be really satisfying.
And I'll even add this in there. Each of the different types of fish have a different shape. So it's not like it's just like a square. It's like this fish might be two squares long and one square, but this one might be like a curved one, like and it does a big S shape. So you have, it's not just all the same types of shapes.
And then sometimes you're like making the decision of like, oh, it can't fit. Am I going to have to get rid of one of these fish? What's the one fish that I'm okay with getting rid of? Or some salvage that you found? Do I care more about money? Do I care more about the getting the salvage, which is able to advance my upgrades? I think it's got a lot of simple systems that work really well together.
Yeah. Was there one that stood out to you as the most? I know you just mentioned like the fitting all the fish into the ship, but was there a spot that
helped
you?
I liked getting the weird mutated fish, and because they're typically worth a lot of money. And so a lot of the other stuff I felt like was in pursuit of being able to get more fish. So like the upgrades were, I can get the different rods or the different like crab pots that are able to catch the bigger stuff, or I can get the lights upgraded so that I can go less crazy and stay out at night and still find the weird fish. Or the big one is getting bigger cargo space, so that you can, some of the fish can be really big and like you can only like hold a couple of them. But once you get your hold upgraded. So I feel like for me, it was the fish to money pipeline, and then everything else around that was just like, how can I do that more efficiently?
Yeah. One of the interesting things that came up for me in this game was the thing that really motivated me was upgrading my ship to the point where it is its maximum efficiency. And that was where my motivation, my goal was kind of like in that area. And before I finished the game, like maybe like a whole like quest line before I finished the game, I had fully upgraded my ship, and I was still craving for there to be more upgrades in my ship. And I was like trying to, like, I think I've maxed the ship out completely. And when I hit that point, even though I hadn't finished the game yet, my like motivation to continue in the game dropped off a lot, because my main motivation feature kind of had disappeared. And I think that's kind of interesting to think about in the real world. Just like, what is the thing that motivates you, like, and drives you as you're going through life, the goals that you have? And I think that it's really easy. A couple of weeks ago, we were talking about the quote, the Seneca quote.
That was next in the episode.
Oh, I thought we talked about it in the episode. We didn't! Okay.
I don't have the exact quote, but the gist of the quote is that most people don't actually have goals or aims. They just kind of go out and let life happen to them. And the end part of the quote is that they do not what they intended, but what they happen to come across. And I feel like simultaneously, I see a lot of other people in the world through that lens, but also there are times where I feel very condemned by the quote of like, do I have like a sense of purpose, or like, this is what I want to accomplish today, versus I kind of just am living and just am willing to experience whatever happens. I think that is really a tricky thing in our modern world, where so much what we experience is filtered through like algorithms online of, you know, I know sometimes I get really frustrated with myself if I get spiraled down like a YouTube wormhole of, you know, all of a sudden you realize, oh, I stayed up super late tonight watching YouTube. And it was, I don't feel like satisfied. I felt like I wasted my time. And I think it's, you know, it's a double-edged sword of like, I could be doing this and not feel bad about it and not have like the sense of like, I want to grow and change and be more focused and purposeful. But I also want to actually go out and do it. And you don't, if you don't actually have clear goals and just know like, I don't want to do it, it's really hard to fight against some of this stuff in our lives.
So actually a question I want to ask you, because we've had conversations in the past where to-do lists are not something that motivates you. You're not into to-do lists at all. Do you feel like you're a goal-oriented person? That's kind of like a different way of saying it. But what are your thoughts on do you feel like you're goal-oriented?
Not exactly. I feel like I like feeling like listening to something intellectually stimulating, and I get really excited about stuff. I feel like I'm not someone who is not willing to make big changes.
Okay.
But I feel like I do a poor job of having a vision of where I, like, a specific vision of where I want my life to be. I have a lot of, like, very broad, what I would consider positive, good views. Like, I want to, you know, be involved in my church. I want to be a good father. I want to be a good husband. I want to provide for my family. And those are, I think, are very positive, good, broad categories. But having like a, you know, a specific sense of like, I want to build a community that looks like this. I want to achieve this in my career, or like have this creative outlet that I am going to, you know, dedicate myself towards. I feel like a lot of those are areas that I don't specify, but a lot of times I don't know how to specify. I feel like that's the tricky part.
So I want to speak to kind of my thought process here, but I also want to throw this question out so you can think about it for a second of like, do you think that there's a reason that we are less goal oriented as people, like maybe from the way we grew up? So in my head, like, I'm not a super goal oriented person either. Like, I really enjoy having a project that I'm doing that I'm like really excited for. And I'm usually the type of person, and I think you are as well, to like get stuff done quick, or not necessarily, I think we're both procrastinators, but like when we're excited about something, we're good at making that thing happen. And so I think for me, it's hard for me to be able to see my big picture down the line, like goals clearly now. And sometimes they are clear, and then those things I'm like, I can latch onto and get really excited about. Like, a big thing for me right now has been like writing music, like writing songs and things like that. I get super pumped about that, and I can see like the path where it's like, these songs are going to be released in an album like soon. And I get really excited about that, but it's harder for me to like see what are the things that I'm aiming for in life that I'm doing. And I think that there are very specific things that I can see those things, but I also can lose sight of those things pretty easily as well.
Definitely. I don't know if there, I'm back to your question you asked me, if there's any specific thing growing up that caused us to be the way that we are. I feel like growing up and currently, I feel this very strong tension between this like nonconformist aspect of our being with this like conservative, take the safe path mixture. And it's a really weird balance to kind of hold in my head. Cause a lot of times I like the radical, let's make big changes. But I feel like temperamentally I am very much a play it safe, I'm a very even keel kind of guy. And so to actually pull the trigger on some of those things, I feel like is a lot harder for me because I value like stability and consistency. And so a lot of the times that will dwarf my sense of like adventure, I guess you could put it, where the risk-taking side to the point where I won't even like start down a path because I'm like, there's a lot of risk to do it fully. So I'm not even going to do it a little bit. And so that's kind of a weird mixture of I feel like if I was more inclined to be a risk taker, it would be easier for me to set crazy big goals and then figure out what I need to do to strive for them. So I feel like I'm pretty good at actually like implementing, like I need to make changes. I'm going to do something differently. I don't feel the need to be exactly like everybody else. I am very okay being right. different and being weird. But there's times I feel like I don't exhibit that enough.
Mm. One of the things that was popping into my head as you were talking is like, I would describe Paul as like the ideal wingman. And I know we've talked about this before, and you said like you're like the support. And if you're thinking about a game or whatever, you're the person who's there, and you are wingman number one. You're there, and if somebody else is like leading the charge, you're like right there with them, and you enjoy that. But maybe you're not the person who's usually going to be running out in front with the flag out in front. And having someone else follow after you. Even though you are totally capable of doing that, your natural bend is to be, like, first mate. Like,
yes.
And, like, you're going to be the greatest first mate of all time. Yeah, I don't know. Do you speak to that at all?
For sure. It goes back to another quote I was telling you about. I don't know who says it. The quote is, "There is a certain degree of loneliness is the price you have to pay for a certain complexity of mind." Basically saying, as you are excited about being weirder or like having unique deep thoughts, there are less people who are like you out there, and so it's harder to find community that are actually into the same things. It's really easy to find community on stuff that universally is loved. Sports, super easy to find community. There's certain TV shows where it's just like super easy to watch and engage in. You're not necessarily growing, but it's like some fun, mindless entertainment that lots of other people are also consuming. And so there's this sense of like, we could talk about the same things.
Yeah.
And I feel like what you're saying with like me being a wingman, but also having these like nonconformist tendencies and these somewhat eclectic interests make it really hard to have the other people in your life who are leading the charge in the areas where I am interested
right.
in.
Which is why we're probably such good friends, because we have very similar eclectic tastes. And yes. So then we can, you'll invite me over. You lead the charge when it comes to board games.
Yes.
But I am all right there. I'm like, yes, let's do it. This is going to be great. And that is interesting, because I feel like when we were younger, I was much more... I feel like I maybe did more like let's do this crazy thing, and I don't even know if they're that crazy. It's like, oh, we're gonna go jump off a waterfall. That's kind of crazy. But for us, it's like, oh yeah, that's what you did at that time. And I feel like part of me has like tapered out or tamed out a little bit, and that's not 100% true. But like I don't feel like it's something that I do as purposefully, or like I'm doing it as regularly. And I think sometimes that makes me a little bit like, man, I do love doing adventures. And so one of the things that I really love end up happening is like traveling with my wife, where we go and do these weird things that nobody else really wants to do. Like we went to this new area and this new place, and then on this island, and we walked like 14 miles. It might have been, I don't remember if it was 7 miles there and 7 miles back, or if it was like 7 miles total. So it was either 7 or 14 miles. But like everyone else who we were with was like, you guys are crazy. But we're like, this is so fun. Like we did all this stuff.
Experiencing different stuff.
We found these like ruins of this old place. We were like hanging out in it. Like that to me was just like so much fun.
Yeah.
But we're really getting off Dredge right now. But I think this is stuff that's interesting. Like what motivates you? Because that motivation in the game really dropped off for me. I was like, I want to finish the game. But man, I wish that I could still keep upgrading my ship. And I think I want to find the things in life that are that upgrading the ship things. And I think that that brings about a lot of cool things in life where it's like you're aiming at something. And something else I was thinking about is the fact that when we're aiming, we can aim at things that are not necessarily good or beneficial or helpful.
That's the other scary part.
And so there are good things to aim at. Like one of the things I think a lot of people do aim at is like wealth and money. And personally, that's not something that motivates me very much, which I'm grateful for. And it's not like I have very much money, but I'm grateful that it's not something that I'm like so fixated on. But it's also like
having money allows you to do a lot of the fun stuff that you do enjoy, though.
Right. So there's all these weird, complex interactions between like the things that motivate you and the things that like you're actually going to invest your time and effort in. And I think the scary part for me really is when I'm not motivated. If I'm not feeling motivated in life, and it's just like the sit on the couch and
yeah,
not do anything.
One thing I have been really thinking a lot about lately is the intersection between discipline and motivation. And I feel like a lot of people will say they're not motivated to do stuff when really they're not disciplined to do stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Just saying, hey, regardless of how I'm feeling, I am going to do X because it is progressing me in a direction that I want to be able to achieve in. And I think there's times and there's different aspects of like, I feel like there are certain things where I'm super disciplined in and other areas where I am like, I can say I lack motivation, but it's like, really, I am lacking discipline in my life in making this thing a priority.
Yeah.
Like one I feel very strongly recently is like, I don't feel motivated to like read my Bible. It's something I want to do and something that I view as like, this is good for me and this is beneficial. And I like, they'll be like, just like sitting in the background, like, I want to do this thing. I want to do this thing. But then when the rubber hits the road, I have time to, and I always choose. Like, lately, I just feel like I always choose to do something else. And then it's very easy to get, oh, I'm just not motivated. I just got to have the right motivation.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, no, if I want to do this, I need to be disciplined and just say, screw it. I am making this a priority as opposed to someday I'll be motivated. But there could be, you know, like I wanted to, you know, write a book someday. I'm never motivated to write. It's like, no, I just need to be disciplined.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, I am very disciplined with, I want to spend time with my family and my kids and make them a priority and not be, you know, spending tons of times on playing video games instead of being with them, or, you know, watching YouTube instead of being with them. And in those areas, it's like, am I motivated to do that? No, I'm disciplined in doing that. And so it's like this weird trick I feel like we play in ourselves of like, when we are accomplishing something, we can see it as discipline of like, no, I'm putting the work in to do this. But then when we're failing at something, we externalize it and it's like this nebulous motivation thing as opposed to...
I'm lacking in motivation. Yeah. I almost feel like in our culture, like discipline is a bad word. Like disciplining your kids or being disciplined yourself, it's like, no, just be true to yourself. Like, I feel like, even though I don't believe that, I still feel the effects of that mentality in my life, where I'm just like, I know that discipline is good, and it actually brings about, like, change or growth, but it's easy to be like, I'd rather not be disciplined and just let everything come to me easily. And
yeah.
And I think that we probably have, because we were really good at school and we succeeded in sports and things like that. Like, it's not like our life was all perfect, but like we didn't have, there was some level of like not needing to be disciplined in,
to achieve areas that people around us viewed as valuable.
Right. And so it's like, oh, if I didn't need to study, but I could still get a good grade. Like, I didn't need to study. And I could get the good grade, and everyone would think, wow, you're so great. And I was like, I just lucked out that God gave me the intellect that he did, that I can succeed in this area that maybe some other people wouldn't be able to just succeed without doing their homework.
For sure.
Yeah.
I don't know about you, though, but I feel, in that realm, an immense amount of respect, specifically for our brother David, who does not have the same natural inclination to just catch on to stuff.
Right.
But he worked his butt off, and like he was valedictorian of his class, not based off of just coasting off of it came easy to him, but off of his dedication. You know, there's some degree of like he was striving to do what we did because both of us were valedictorians, but it didn't come easy to him. And so I really respect him and the drive that he has put forth in a lot of different areas in his life. That it's like, man, if I could harness
David's
work ethic and just like point it at certain directions, it's like, what could I accomplish? And it's like,
and I think that that's something that will bother me sometimes, where it's like, I feel like I have a lot of gifts that God's given me. Am I utilizing the gifts that he's given? Like, he's given me these talents to do with what I will. And am I just like, oh, I'm doing good enough? Like,
yeah.
That's a scary thought. And not like because God's going to like be mad at me, but because I want to do as much as I can with what I've been given.
Yeah.
And so I think that when I think that way, it's like, man, I want to do great things, but also I don't really know what great thing I want to do. Which comes back to like direction. So there's motivation and then there's direction as well.
Yes.
Or discipline and direction. The two D's.
So wrapping that up, I'm curious, what do you think that like Dredge is like, does it have a message or is it a thing that's saying, or is it just like this fun romp of a game?
I do think that there is some things that it's trying to say, and without getting into like spoiling like some of the quests that the collector is sending you on, you start recognizing like how maybe you are kind of meddling in your own head. Like I think that there are some things that Dredge is trying to say. And I don't know how to say it without like telling you like the twist to the ending and all those different types of things. But I do think that, it's trying to say in some regards that we're our own worst enemy. And I think that in a lot of ways in our life, we can convince ourselves that we're not motivated when we're just not disciplined. Kind of things that you're talking about. So I think that that is tied in with kind of some of the things that the game like puts forward. I don't even know if it's really what they're trying to say, but because of the way that the story kind of plays out,
yeah,
those types of ideas are exposed.
I definitely think there's a degree of making you contemplate why you're doing stuff. This repetitiveness that we can get stuck in, like these game loops of our lives of just, this is what I do. And then having someone being able to kind of point you or twist you in a direction that doesn't like come across as being like a bad decision, but then having that become all consuming, in your life, you know, and there's like all of these terrors and horrors coming up around you. That's like, should be warning signs against what you're doing, but you can get really easily stuck in your ways.
Yeah. I think that like really does connect what Dredge puts forward as a game, even though it's like, it's a fishing game where you're going out and you're trying to provide for yourself, whatever it is. Anyways,
I think I'm ready to move to ranking.
I do too. So, we have our four areas of ranking: the skip the line, cut ahead, wait your turn, and the end of the line. You have a gut feeling of where you need.
I have a not strong opinion.
Okay, give me your not strong opinion.
I feel like it's in wait your turn.
Okay. Top of it, bottom of it, just anywhere in it?
It's a game I enjoyed my time with. But I feel like it's very niche. It's got a cool story, a cool premise, but it's not something, like, I played it twice, and I don't know that I feel the need to ever come back. Not that replayability is the end-all be-all. It's got a cool little loop, and this gameplay loop that hooks you on for, you know, a number of hours, but it's not anything like super deep or game changing or mind blowing. The story is serviceable and fun, but it's nothing like,
It doesn't wow.
I didn't feel wowed in any of the aspects. I just felt like there was a lot of good.
Yeah.
It was consistently good through a bunch of different veins of unique gameplay.
Yeah. I think that it being in Wait Your Turn feels right to me as well. So I think we just kind of dive in to the bottom of it or the top of it.
It doesn't matter to me.
All right, let's start at the bottom. So Golf Story is the bottom of Wait Your Turn. Golf Story.
We haven't talked about Golf Story in a long time.
Golf Story versus Dredge.
I'm leaning towards Dredge over Golf Story. I feel like they both have like a strange whimsicalness to them.
Right.
Whereas Golf Story is like a funny, fun whimsical, which depending on your mood, the writing can either hit or fall very flat.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I feel like there's not that much writing. It's more of like emergent storytelling of like you're experiencing stuff and the kind of people are also commenting on that. I feel like it connects with the gameplay a lot more in the storytelling aspect, that the gameplay loop and the storytelling kind of work more hand in hand than I feel like it does in Golf Story.
No, I think I would give Dredge the edge over Golf Story as well. So let's move it up. So I think Dredge and What Remains of Edith Finch are interesting because they both have this kind of pseudo horror aspect.
Ominous feeling to them.
Where What Remains of Edith Finch is much more on rails. Whereas Dredge is kind of like...
It allows for exploration.
There's a lot of exploration. And I think that really that aspect of the game is super satisfying of like, I'm going to this new area that I've never been and I don't really know what I'm going to experience. And there were so many times that like I felt like I knew what to expect and then I would get to the new area that I'd never been to and it was nothing like I expected. And it's like, oh, I just got to completely shift my brain and take the punches as they come. Personally, I would probably put Dredge a little bit above What Remains of Edith Finch, but I think you're higher on What Remains.
I really like What Remains, but I do feel like it, to me, it's still hard to call it a game. It is like just an experience that's more akin to watching a movie, that you're interacting with. I feel like if there was a little bit more agency in What Remains, as far as like the order of which you experienced stuff or some sort of, I don't know, like that made it feel more like you were involved as opposed to just being on rails. Cause it's still a great experience on rails. And I think it would be a very hard challenge to have the same exact feel of the game or the story of the game come across the same if you had a little bit more agency in which directions you took. But I really do like the exploration aspects of just I like exploration in games, period. And I think the discovery and going about you and just having the agency to do things. And you can literally go any direction right off the... You don't even have to start in the main area. You could just... I mean, it'd take you a while because your boat's slow. But it's still contained enough that, you know, something like Minecraft, you can do anything. But sometimes... That's
you're
hard because you need to have
it
clear, like, this is what you should be doing, or this is a goal that you can set for yourself.
Yeah.
So I'm cool with Dredge above.
I think that so the next in line is Crypt of the Necrodancer, Paul, the bane of Paul's existence. this is probably the first spot, but I might give the edge to the one that's on the list already. So Crypt of the Necrodancer, I just feel like is such a unique game that I really latched onto. And I know you didn't, but just like the rhythm and the idea of being a dungeon crawler and a roguelite, those pieces all sound fun to me. And then when they put them all together, I really enjoyed my time with Crypt of the Necrodancer. But I want to hear your thoughts comparing that to Dredge and which one you would put where.
I feel like you're right in that they both take not crazy concepts. I feel like Crypt has a lot more conventional like gaming stuff that, at least in our world of gaming, that we're more drawn to, is stuff we know and is more familiar with the fantasy aspects and the dungeon crawling. and then throws this musical timing like game on top of it that I think is this really cool, unique, like, I don't know that I'd ever consider coming up with that idea.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Dredge is just like, let's have a cool exploration, little fishing mini game with some story on it. Like, there's no,
they expanded like, from there.
There's no, wow, that's a crazy idea that didn't seem like it would work, but part of it was I wasn't good at Crypt. The Necrodancer is just, I love the concept. I think it's a really cool idea. I think I enjoyed Dredge more, but it doesn't necessarily determine where things are on our list. And I definitely would put Chance of Sonar above Dredge.
Yeah, so Chance of Sonar is the next one up. And I 100% agreed with, I think definitely like Chance of Sonar more than Dredge.
I definitely think we should do our best to get the DDR mats.
And try
that with Crypt the Necrodancer. I feel like, for me, adding an actual physical component as opposed to just using your thumbs could, and the like community aspect of like playing it together,
right,
and like laughing at like trying to dance your way through this, I think that is potentially what Crypt needs for me to have it actually bump into something I enjoy more.
Right. So, based on what you just said there, it almost feels like you're saying...
I'm cool with Crypt being above.
Okay, so the Crypt of the Necrodancer is number 16. That makes Dredge the new number 17. That feels pretty good to me.
Yeah, I like it.
Well, thank you for joining us again for another episode of IndieQ. We hope you have a great week.